Welcome to Getting Legal With It, a podcast by Colorado Young Lawyers for Colorado Young Lawyers. I'm your host, Kevin Chaney. For those who are listening for the first time, I'm a personal injury and criminal defense lawyer here in Denver, Colorado. I graduated from the University of Colorado Law School in 2014 and founded my practice, Chaney, Galuzzi & Howard, LLC, a short time later. I'm a member of the Colorado Trial Lawyers Association, where I serve as the co-chair of its new lawyers division, and I also serve on CTLA's executive and legislative committees. I'm also a member of the Colorado Criminal Defense Bar Association, and finally, I serve on the executive council for the Colorado Bar Association's Young Lawyers Division. If you're interested in learning more about any of these awesome organizations, please feel free to shoot me an email at kevin@cghlawfirm.com. Today you're listening to our second episode of Getting Legal With It. This podcast is created and sponsored by the Colorado Bar Association's Young Lawyers Division. Our goal with this podcast is to bring you monthly episodes with information that will be both fun and informative for young lawyers. We have some awesome guests lined up, and we're just getting started. If you like our podcast, please, please, please leave us a review and tell your colleagues. With that, let's jump right in. Excited for our guest today, Mr. Todd Rogers. How are you doing today, Todd?
Hey, Kevin. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Todd is the Assistant Dean for Career Development at CU Law School. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, I've been there over 8 years now. Really have enjoyed my time in Boulder.
Awesome. Well, we'll just start with some basic and kind of introductions and information about you. Where are you from and kind of what was your path to Boulder?
Yeah, so immediately before I came to Boulder, I had the same position at the University of Kansas School of Law in Lawrence, and I was there just about 8 years. But going way back, grew up in the Northeast. My dad was a real estate representative for Mobil Oil, not a lawyer. And my mom was a school teacher. And because of my dad's career, we moved around fairly often. So we went from Connecticut to Northern Virginia and then to Dallas, Texas, just north of Dallas in Plano. And that's where I first started thinking about becoming a lawyer and went to the University of Texas, law school, graduated, and was doing anything I could to stay around Austin for another few years. I clerked for a couple of judges, which turned out to be a great personal experience, great professional experience. After that, through a variety of personal reasons, found myself in Boulder for about a year, having 2 years of judicial clerkship experience, but never having practiced law. And I knew that after that short stint in Boulder, I was going to end up in the Kansas City area. So I was working actually at the CU Law School in an administrative assistant capacity while I was studying for the Kansas Bar, the Missouri Bar, and looking for a job in Kansas City.
Okay. Interesting.
Never thinking for a minute that that's what I would do for a living.
Right.
And it, you know, it's turned out to be my life's work because after I went to Kansas City, I worked for Lathrop & Gage for about 2 years. The job of Director of Career Services came open at the University of Kansas School of Law. And I started reflecting on what I liked in my law practice, what I liked as a judicial clerk. And it was really all the people, the personal interactions I had. And I thought, well, this is kind of a risky move. I was 29.
Right.
I'd only been practicing law in any capacity for 4 years and as a traditional attorney for two. And I thought, I sure would like to work at a university, work with people all the time, but I don't know if I'm ready to hop off this, you know, traditional law practice train yet. So I applied thinking they're never going to pick me for an interview because I'm too young. Well, they selected me for an interview and then they gave me the job. And so I had a lot of soul searching to figure out if I wanted to take that job because I knew that that was probably going to be a pretty clear indication to future legal employers that, you know, maybe I wasn't committed to the traditional practice of law. But I took the leap and, you know, within probably a few weeks, I knew that it was the right move for me and worked with, you know, tons of great law students in Lawrence. And then years later, mainly for personal reasons and wanting a little bit of a change in a new location, applied in Boulder and made that move.
Sure. So I guess to kind of start a little closer to the beginning, what What made you kind of want to be a lawyer? You know, you said your dad was kind of in real estate mm-hmm. for an oil company. What was there a book or a movie or TV or an event that kind of attracted you to the practice of law?
Yeah, it was mainly in high school. We had an elective course called Law Major Studies, and it was a 2-hour course that met every day, and it was kind of a mini law school. And I took it just because it seemed interesting. I don't have any lawyers in my family, with the exception of a cousin who practiced at a large firm for many years. But you know, we really didn't talk about that, so I had no exposure to the legal profession. So through that course, Dale Flurry was the teacher's name, and he was great. He was really engaging, really committed, energetic, and about 30 of us went through that course. That would have been my junior year.
Hmm.
And just fell in love with the whole idea of doing that in an academic setting for 3 years, not really thinking beyond that 3 years. And maybe that was my downfall.
Sure.
Law school would be neat. I don't know about this being a lawyer thing.
Maybe we'll get to that in the advice section
right,
in a little while.
Right.
Think that through.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's what kind of put that idea in my head and applied to several law schools. I went to undergrad, I didn't mention this, at Trinity University in San Antonio, so really
okay.
small school, about 2,000 students. So when I was applying to law school and thinking about it kind of as a purely academic endeavor, I knew I wanted a different academic setting, so mm-hmm. I applied to very big state schools predominantly.
UT probably qualifies for that.
Huge, huge.
More than a couple people there.
Yeah, yeah, and it was a blast. You know, I got into a couple other big state schools, but you know, UT, especially at the time, was dirt cheap for a really good education. Just had to go up the road from San Antonio, so you know, didn't have to uproot my life much at all, and was really excited to be there.
This is not at all legal related, but I'm a big sports fan, and you were at Texas and then Kansas. So did you get to watch any good sports at either of those schools?
My 1L grades would suggest probably too much.
too many sporting events?
Yeah.
That's fair.
I was telling this to a 1L the other day at CU that I remember being in the library during the first couple months of law school, and it was, you know, it was a beautiful tall building, and I could look out the library windows and see the football stadium. And I could see all these happy undergrads having a great time on a Saturday morning or afternoon or evening. And I was in the library and I thought, I'm going to change things up. I'm going to go be over there looking back this way at the law school. And so, yeah, I went to all the football games, a lot of basketball games, got really into it. And again, I didn't have that experience
right.
as an undergrad.
Yeah.
So I was kind of reliving
sure.
my undergrad years, you know, through all those sporting events. And it was great, you know, traveled to different away games, and it wasn't until my spring semester of 1L year that I kind of reevaluated and thought, maybe I did that a little too much.
Oh, wait a second here.
Yeah.
These grades aren't quite where I want them to be.
But, you know, kind of put it together. And that's actually helpful in what I do now, because I'm mm-hmm. able to sit down at this time of year with 1Ls and say, there are a lot of things you can do differently
right.
your spring semester. Mm-hmm. And if grades are important to you and you want to do well academically, you can really learn from some missteps you made
sure.
initially.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you went to law school, and I think we kind of touched on this, when you went to law school, did you have a particular area of law or kind of a career in mind, or were you really just kind of open to everything? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I really was. I roomed my freshman year with a guy who knew he wanted to be a criminal defense lawyer,
mm-hmm.
and he still is in Austin. And that wasn't me. I didn't have a focus. I came from a business background as an undergrad, accounting and finance, and without much thought or reflection, just assumed, okay, well, that's what I did as an undergrad. I should take transactional courses in law school. And didn't talk to career counselors, didn't talk to lawyers that were out there practicing about what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So was coming at it from a very ill-informed place, took all those courses, all those, you know, business, corporate, transactional courses, my 2L year, went to work for a big law firm that had a branch office in Dallas doing that work. And you're going to predict the end of the story. Figured out that I didn't like that.
Fair.
And so I went back as a 3L And I took the polar opposite set of courses. I took all the trial courses and trial ad and more civil procedure and all that. And that prepared me very well to go work for the two appellate judges that I ended up working for at the Texas Court of Appeals mm-hmm. in Austin. But I was never thinking like three steps ahead.
Right.
I was thinking like barely one step ahead. And it at least got me to the point of being a competent law clerk and developing some great relationships with judges. But even at the end of the clerkship, I wasn't sold on what sort of lawyer I wanted to be.
And, you know, we'll probably get to this a little bit later in the podcast, but I guess for our law students that may be listening or young lawyers, is that okay? Is it okay to get to law school and not really have a direction? I know from at least personal experience, I came to law school wanting to be a public defender, and I ended up switching to do predominantly personal injury. I still do a little bit of criminal defense, but there was definitely a shift while I was in law school. So I guess for the people that may be listening that, you know, maybe don't have it quite figured out yet or are going through a transition where they're, you know, shifting from what they thought they wanted to do to maybe what they think they might want to do now, is that okay? Will they still make it?
Yeah, I think it's just fine. I do think that in this legal market, even though we've had a good one for a number of years now, the lingering memory of the recession is there for so many of us. And one thing we try to impress upon our law students when they come in is that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that times were pretty lean for lawyers, and we all learned a lot of valuable lessons, and we're trying to impart to them these lessons now, including putting together a series of experiences while you're a law student. And so something that, you know, if any current law students listen to this, they'll roll their eyes at because they hear it so much from me, is that the formula these days seems to be get at least 4 quality work experiences while you're a law student. And through the course of doing that, you're bound to figure some things out. And you may not be able to figure out exactly the lessons you've learned until you're looking back upon all these experiences. But that's a big difference from what students do now and what we didn't have to do back when I went to law school. You know, you could get away with having 1 quality work experience, which was going to lead to a job. And that was a trap that I didn't even know I was falling into. You know, I got this, what everybody told me was a great job, my 2L summer. And then I wasn't supposed to have to think about my career anymore because I was just going to end up going to work for that firm and
right,
everything would be fine.
Right, it's all going to be set for you.
So even our students that are on a very traditional path like that, I try to get them to consider other part-time jobs to see what life outside of the employer that they're committed to for a summer would be like, or to at least go talk to lawyers that do things that are different from the path they're on. And I wish I would have asked. I'm sure somebody would have told me that mm-hmm. at UT, but I never asked. I didn't know to ask. So we're trying to make sure that students know to ask those questions and know to gather a lot of different experiences.
And so when you talk about 4 quality work experiences, are you saying working for 4 different entities or trying to do 4 different types of law? Or can you tell us a little bit more about you know, what that means and what,
sure.
you know, young lawyers should be trying to do.
Yeah, I think it could take on a number of forms. Very few students work for one employer all the way through, although we do see that at times. But really what I'm referring to is 4 different time periods. So you have your 1L summer, your 2L summer, something during your second year, something during your third year, and broadly defined. So it could be a paid internship, of course. It could be a 4-credit externship, you know, could be with different employers, could be with the same employer, but as long as you're consistently gaining experience as a law student, I think it makes it so much easier when you're a lawyer to switch gears. You can rely on these past experiences. You can think about the lessons you've learned through them. Sometimes it's difficult, more difficult for a student who worked through all those time periods, but just for one employer,
right,
to then switch gears. And we do see that, and some, you know, kind of arises in the context of large firms. Sometimes it also can arise with public defenders or DAs where, you know, you get it happily entrenched in a place, but you don't experience other paths. And then if you do decide you want to shift gears, it becomes
a little
more daunting,
right,
and scary.
Right.
And of course, you know, we are open always to talk to alums. I know DU is the same way. So we really do want to encourage our graduates to come back to us and to talk through these questions and talk through these issues.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit while we're on this topic, I guess, kind of about the legal market. So I graduated in 2014. And so the recession was just kind of ending, but we were still in the throes of we're all drowning in debt. We'll never get jobs and the sky is falling. I hear that the legal market has gotten better since then. What are you seeing kind of in your career development role about how the legal market has changed, I guess, over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years or so?
Yeah, you were right there in the middle of the biggest change that I've observed in my almost 20 years of doing this. You know, I started counseling law students in 2003, and at that point, we were in a little bit of a mini recession, and then we had 4 years of incredible growth and jobs out there for everyone. And I think everyone got accustomed to that. And so when the recession was obviously coming, law schools tried different things, and a lot of those things didn't work, obviously, because
right.
The classes of 2010, 11, 12 were in rough shape. And then things started to turn around in 2013 for the graduates of most law schools. And we've been fortunate in the Rocky Mountain region that our recovery happened a little bit sooner and faster than other regions of the country. So we've enjoyed really solid employment, both from entry-level employment and our graduates lateraling to other places, you know, really starting with your class up to present. And, you know, I think no matter what you do for a living these days, everyone's sort of waiting for the other shoe to fall, you know,
right.
Is it going to be, with respect to what I do, is it going to impact students that are in the building now, or is it farther in the future? And we're going to keep our fingers crossed that, you know, that economic streak that we've been on continues for as long as possible.
Have you seen, I guess, kind of permanent changes to the legal profession, you know, that, you know, it doesn't look like we're going back to the old days where everyone, you know, just did OCIs, got a big law job, and it was all, you know, very just straightforward. You follow the path and you get a job. Assuming that we're not going back to that model, what kind of permanent changes have you seen in the profession? And what changes do you see kind of coming on the horizon that young lawyers should kind of be aware of?
Right. Two things stick out to me, and that's a question that I try to address any chance I get with prospective law students, because I want people to know what they're getting into
right.
in law school and in the profession that follows. And so we talk a lot in you know, things like admission days when the prospective students come to campus and in correspondence with them about the changes that the legal profession has gone through. And one of the big ones is when I first started working at a law school in 2003, most law schools could count on at least half, if not two-thirds of their graduates going into law firm jobs as their entry-level job. And that's all law firm jobs, regardless of size,
right.
would make up that half to two-thirds. And now most law schools are experiencing graduating classes that have a third of students going into law firms, typically not any more than 40%.
Wow.
So it's a huge difference. And it really impacts a lot of things, including average salaries. Because back in the day when, you know, maybe 60% of your grads were going into law firm work, and a lot of them were going into large firms.
Right.
You could look at a salary curve and feel pretty good about it
yeah.
as a law school administrator.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now it's very important when you sit down with a prospective law student to talk about what, even in a good market, salary realities look like. And yes, you can still make a lot of money as a lawyer, but here's the swath of employers that are going to come recruit and can pay that much initially. And so it gets into a good discussion about long-term career expectations and not just being myopic on what am I going to make as a first-year lawyer?
Sure. Because
there's so much more to the legal profession than salary, and there's so much more to a career than where you start. And so we work through a lot of that with students particularly at this time of year again, where our 1Ls are getting their first grades in, mm-hmm. and they're hearing all these rumors, and hopefully they come to us to get our input as well, about what you need to have academically to secure certain jobs, which lead to certain outcomes.
Right.
But it is definitely true that law firm jobs on the whole are less plentiful than they were, you know, 15 years ago.
Sure. I guess kind of related to that, I'm kind of curious about practice areas. So obviously the legal profession evolves, and practice areas that may have been super plentiful 30, 40 years ago have kind of gone away. We've got a lot of new technologies, which may be giving rise to here in Colorado. We had the legalization of cannabis, which gave rise to a whole different type of kind of regulatory lawyer. What new practice areas are you kind of seeing on the horizon? And I guess I'm specifically, you know, if somebody was looking at going to law school, or maybe was one or two or 3L or a fresh graduate and was kind of looking for a practice area for the future.
Yeah.
What kind of areas are you seeing that they may want to look into?
Yeah, one that we've seen a lot of interest lately from the market and from our students is privacy. And that can take so many different forms. You know, data privacy is hugely important in almost everything we do these days. And we're fortunate that we've got some really outstanding faculty members in that area. We've got a lot of tech companies, obviously, in the area, and law firms that service those tech companies. So, you know, that is one thing that I probably didn't even know existed before I came here to Boulder to work at CU Law. The other area that was really interesting specific to our region, and this was the biggest change that I experienced when I went from the Midwest to the Rocky Mountain region,
sure,
is that the corporate community in the Metro Denver area is very tied in with the law schools here. And that leads to not only internships with these companies, in-house internships, but thankfully also leads to permanent job opportunities, entry-level lawyer opportunities, and entry-level opportunities that are kind of at the intersection of business and law. Career counselors call it JD Advantage or JD Preferred, where you're not required to have a JD, you're not required to have a law license, but it sure helps
in
the job. And so that helps a lot with diversifying a law school's employment for that entry-level group of graduates. Because while law firm opportunities diminished over the recession and then have kind of stayed in that state ever since the recession, other areas, and for us, that means these corporate opportunities have grown. We've also put a lot of investment into opportunities to work for a year or two in a fellowship or a residency. So you know going in, it's not going to be your permanent job,
right?
But it's going to lead to a permanent job. And so that's how a lot of law schools changed for the better after the recession, because they were taking a more long-term approach and trying to think, okay, how are we going to get our grads to where they want to be eventually? What is that first job going to look like? And so for us, you know, in the absence of that, you know, 60% of law firm jobs, we started plugging in more judicial clerkships, more in-house opportunities, and some of these emerging practice areas that you mentioned.
So did we see, I guess, a lot of these corporations and businesses really decide to bring a lot of their legal work in-house? Was that kind of one of the impacts of the recession? And is that why there may be more jobs working directly for the company rather than working for the law firm, which is hired then by the company?
Yeah, that's how it's always been explained to me, that general counsels really started scrutinizing their legal bills more than they ever had before and saying things like, we're just not going to pay at all for first year or second year lawyer work. So don't bother staffing our matters with those lawyers.
Right.
And of course, the firm hears that. And what do? They stop hiring
as many. We don't need as many first and second years.
Right. Yeah. And so they're hiring more laterals. The companies still need that legal work done. And so they're saying, okay, rather than paying $300 an hour for a first year associate at a larger firm to do this work, let's bring in somebody at, you know, $95K a year as a first year lawyer, which was, you know, unheard of years ago. all the in-house jobs were requiring experience. But they were thinking, you know, we're not going to go nuts with this, but here and there we might add someone brand new to do this work, and we'll train them, and we'll end up with a lot better economic outcome. So we did see a lot of that. And I saw next to none of that at the University of Kansas, partly because of when I was there and partly because I think the Rocky Mountain region companies are just more likely to do that sort of thing. So that was really neat for me to be here and to see that sort of involvement with the business community.
Well, let's move to a topic that I know all young lawyers, well, at least all law students and a lot of young lawyers are interested in, how to get a job.
Yes.
So I guess I'd kind of like to start off with let's talk about law students and then we'll talk about young lawyers. I'm sure you get asked this question all the time. What advice do you give to law students other than, I think we've already talked about kind of the four quality experiences. Mm-hmm. What other things are you telling law students to be doing while they're in law school to maximize the chance that they get hired by someone?
Yeah, and I think it's all a matter of where you are in the law school experience and knowing what boxes you need to be checking at that time. And so when you're a first-year law student, knowing that you're largely focusing on your academics, you're trying to figure out how to read cases and how to participate in class and how to study for finals. And as you transition into your second semester, you have more time because you're getting more efficient to do some other things. You probably attend events during your first semester, but that sort of ramps up your second semester. You're meeting more lawyers. You're asking them for advice. You're probably asking them for additional contacts. And before long, you've got a pretty good network. You've built connections in the local legal community, and that's something you'll never stop doing. And the students that other students look at with envy and think, oh, it comes easy to them, it hardly ever does.
Right.
You just don't see all of this connection building that they're doing. And for most law schools, that's pretty easy to do because the law school itself is bringing so many lawyers onto campus that you can stay in that building and meet a ton of people. And you get the benefit of being new to the profession. So, you know, that old adage of there is no stupid question, there's really not when you're early on in your law school career. So you can ask all sorts of things about what life is like, and you're probably too new for them to feel like you're asking them for a job. So they're going to be super candid with you, and they're going to tell you what it's like to be the type of lawyer that they are. So that's the thing, apart from getting the jobs as a law student and putting together that portfolio of experience, that has always been important and is even more important when economic times are more lean. The students that don't do that, when they go to change their path as a practicing lawyer, have to go back and do it anyway.
Basically restart.
Yeah, and so that's what I tell our students. Like, you can do it now or you can do it later. You can do it now while you're here in the building when it's easy.
Right.
Or you could do it later when you have a full-time job and all sorts of outside commitments and have to carve out time for it.
Yeah. And actually, that kind of brings me to my next question, which is actually based on a real world example. I had a young lawyer reach out to me. I believe he graduated 2, maybe 3 years after I did. And he's been working in an in-house counsel role.
Okay.
And he's enjoying parts of it. But he realized that he thinks that his heart is in litigation, and mm-hmm. there's just no litigation at his in-house job. And so he was reaching out to me to basically be like, how do I completely switch my career from in-house to a firm, from transactional, mostly regulatory, to litigation? And I was like, you know, that's a really good question, which I don't necessarily know the answer to, but I'm about to do this podcast with Todd Rogers and he might know the answer to that. What advice would you give to young lawyers who may have been working at a firm or at a different, business for the last couple years, and they realize that, you know, maybe this isn't necessarily the career path I want to be on or the practice area that I want to be in? Is it too late for them 3-4 years out to make a change? And if not, what advice would you give to them to, I guess, basically even start?
I don't think it's too late. I'm an optimist by nature, so I don't think it's too late. I do think that you've probably got to give yourself, and hopefully your economic situation will allow this. I think you've got to give yourself a year or two to reset. And I'm not saying a year or two not working. I'm saying a year or two working in a position that maybe doesn't feel like a perfect fit, but you're thinking about it as a transition opportunity. So if you want to do litigation, I'm assuming maybe this person wants to do commercial litigation if they're coming from that commercial mm-hmm. background, you might have to do a type of litigation that is not ideal in your mind, but that gets you from one path jumping onto another path mm. in the eyes of the market.
Kind of like
at
a stepping
large.
Stone.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's not that different than kind of taking on that student mindset coming right out of law school of like, you know, maybe this isn't exactly what I want to do as an entry level job, but it's a means to an end. So you might have to do that. You know, obviously as a person who wants to be a litigator, there are a variety of ways you could do that. You know, I counsel primarily students who are interested in judicial clerkships, mm-hmm. and that's a great entry-level job out of law school. It's also a great way for somebody to reset. You give yourself a year or two of breathing room, you're developing a new set of skills, and then you can launch from there. That would be one way to do it. I've seen people do it through working for a DA, sometimes a PD route would work. Certainly lots of small firms have more work than they know what to do with.
Sure.
And if you came in and said, you know, I want to do this type of work, I don't have experience in it, here's what I've been doing, and I want to learn, and I want, you know, the mentorship, and I'm really going to, you know, be a sponge for anything you send my way, that could be a winning argument. Sometimes what I see, especially with somebody who's going from in-house back to a more litigation-heavy job, is that they want to go to the largest firm possible because they think that that's going to give them the best, most varied training.
Right.
And that could be the case in some instances, but I think larger firms tend to be more traditional in their thinking.
Sure.
And it might best serve somebody who wants to jump into litigation to get into it as soon as they can and roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty and then transition into something that they want to do long term.
Along those same lines, I actually was speaking with a gentleman just about an hour ago, and this topic came up. What about people who are moving to Colorado? So mm-hmm. we have a lot of young lawyers here that obviously graduated from CU or DU, but Colorado is a great place to live. And so, you know, people who are in other areas are like, yeah, I'm going to go try that out for a little while. If you're a young lawyer moving here from any other state, I guess, and you don't really have a network or connections here, what advice would you give to them on just kind of even where to start? I mean, yeah. obviously it's going to be a process. You're probably not going to get a job the day you move here. But what kind of things would you recommend they even do just to begin?
Yeah. And for someone who is measured by my employer on the percentage of graduates for Colorado law uh-huh. that are employed, I hesitate to even say like, good job deciding to come to Colorado.
Yeah.
Because it actually
don't
is,
come, please. We're full.
It actually is a good decision because the community here is so welcoming. But of course, you know, we are in this position and my counterpart, Eric Bono at DU is the same way, where we're in a very attractive location for law graduates.
Right.
You know, so we are, of course, first and foremost, looking at our graduates and their success. But I do get phone calls like this fairly regularly from graduates of other law schools who want to talk about how do I break in to this market. And what I tell them is it is a very welcoming market. It's not provincial at all. You know, people aren't going to ask you where you went to high school here mm-hmm. Because so many of us are transplants. So I think joining bar associations, going to different events, taking advantage of that natural friendliness that exists here in Colorado is huge. And then they may, like our previous example of someone changing mm-hmm. of what they're doing, they may have to dive into something that is not, in their mind, an ideal first job. But the lateral market is so strong here as well that typically when someone decides to leave an employer and seek new employment, you're not looking at a 6-month process. You're probably not even looking at a 3-month process. It's, you know, it's probably, you know, 1 or 2 months before you get an offer doing something else mm-hmm. if you've established yourself as a Colorado attorney. So that tends to be my advice when I talk to folks in this situation is, you know, you want to be true to yourself. You want to find something that is a good fit, but, you know, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good with this.
Sure.
Get into something, practice law in Colorado, and the rest will figure itself out.
And then moving on to our final topic, I do know that you have a focus kind of on judicial clerkships, and I know that was a big push by CU when I was there, that yeah. clerkships were great and that everyone should consider one. I think I heard our now Attorney General, former Dean Phil Weiser, talk about clerkships for hundreds and hundreds of times during my 3 years there. So for those who are listening and may, you know, still be in law school and considering a clerkship, or I know that people actually go back and clerk after working out right. in the profession. I just heard a few of my friends doing that. Why is clerking important?
You will very rarely run into a former clerk that has anything but glowing things to say about the clerkship, that it was so instrumental in finding a mentor in the judge and perhaps other clerks who had been there before they arrived. Wonderful mentors, wonderful writing training, a great way to realize, hey, I can do this. You know, if regardless of what type of clerk you are, a trial, appellate clerk, state, federal, you see a lot of lawyers. You see a lot of legal writing. And I think by and large, you realize, I can do this. You know, there are some lawyers that are truly outstanding and just superstars. And right. maybe if you work for your entire life, you're not going to write at that level. But for the most part, you read briefs, you watch lawyers in action, and you think after 3 years of Colorado law, I am super competitive
right.
with the lawyers that are out there. I can sure. do this job. And I think for law clerks, that is one of the best things they can take away from the clerkship, is having confidence that they chose well with this profession. Also in Colorado, there are so many different opportunities to clerk. You've got a lot of the state judicial districts that have money for each of their judges to hire a clerk, mm-hmm. which is not true across the board. And I tell our students all the time how lucky they are, because a lot of states just don't have that
sure.
in their budget. And so you can clerk at a lot of different judicial districts at the state trial court level. We have a large court of appeals. Those judges hire law clerks. Our Supreme Court justices are fabulous mentors. And then, of course, you've got 10th Circuit judges here in Denver. You've got federal magistrates and federal district court judges. So there are a lot of opportunities out there. And then we also get students to think about, well, if I don't secure a clerkship in Colorado, what about some of these surrounding states? What about wherever back home is? Mm-hmm. Because you can take a clerkship basically anywhere you do it, and then go back to a location
right.
where you want to be. And I was a case study in that. You know, I clerked in Austin for two state trial court judges, and then my first job search as a lawyer was in Kansas City. And I was very pleasantly surprised at how open the Kansas City firms were to state appellate clerkship experience that was out of state for them, because they knew it meant good writing skills. You know, my writing had been scrutinized every day for 2 years. And so having it scrutinized by a law firm partner was, you know, not at all an unfamiliar experience for me.
What advice would you give to someone who is thinking about clerking? So, you know, obviously, you know, everyone would like to clerk for the U.S. Supreme Court, and very, very few people do. And then, you know, next level down, you've got the, you know, federal courts of appeals. Do you recommend people just take, I guess, quote unquote, the most prestigious clerkship they can get? Or should they really be focused on, you know, hey, I want to do trial work, I should clerk for a trial court judge? Or, hey, I want to stay in Denver, so I should clerk for a judge in Denver? I'm going to, you know, live in Durango, so I should go clerk for a judge out there. Is it just go as prestigious as you can get? Or is there some, you know, larger strategy choices that they should be making when they're deciding on where they want to clerk?
Yeah, I love some of those considerations that you laid out, because I think that is so smart and takes such a long-term career focus. Another one that I would throw out there is, you know, what sort of person are you? Are you going to enjoy appellate work, which is a little more monastic, and you're sitting there with your books and your briefs and your computer?
A lot of reading, a lot of writing.
Yeah. Or, you know, do you want the hustle bustle of a trial court where you're still writing, but, you know, the projects tend to be shorter, on the fly. You may not be writing. You may just be researching and relaying information to a judge. And, you know, knowing who you are, and this theme runs throughout law school with respect to so many things, but, you know, being able to reflect and know what you're good at, what you need work on, and putting yourself in an environment that's going to be the best for you. And that may not be, you know, the quote, most prestigious court. That may not be a good fit for someone. And so as I talked to one L's, and I'm going to talk to a couple next week, because we had an event on Friday at the law school that exposed them to a lot of different judicial clerkship ideas. So when we sit down, that's going to be one of the things I talk to them about, you know, looking down the road a couple of years, what sort of experience do you want? Do you want one that is a little more akin to law school, AKA the appellate clerkship, or do you want something that is, you know, just going to be really quick, both in terms of what you see in the courtroom and what you write, and there are opportunities for either. And usually the answer is to get someone into a judicial internship or externship with one and say, hey, did you like that? And
if so, try
great.
It out.
And if not, let's talk about the other one.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Todd, for joining us on the podcast today. It was super informative and interesting. For those listeners who may have questions or want to reach out to you, or maybe they're hopefully they know how to contact you with you if they're a current CU student. What is your contact information?
Sure. Anyone can reach me at todd.rogers, that's todd.rogers, at colorado.edu. And always try to turn around emails as fast as possible, depending on what time of year it is. That may be a little faster than others, but that's the best way to get in touch with me. And I end up, of course, corresponding with lots of students and alums of Colorado Law, but with graduates and potential employers of our law students from all over the country. So always feel free to get in touch.
Awesome. And again, for those, if anyone would like to reach out to me, talk about personal injury, criminal defense, or just being a young lawyer in Colorado or getting involved in some of the different bar organizations, you can feel free to shoot me an email, kevin@cghlawfirm.com. Thank you to everyone for listening today. Stay tuned for our next episode. I'm really excited about that one. We've got a wonderful young lawyer, Christina Brown, who does a lot of really interesting immigration work and doing a lot of really important work down at the border. So stay tuned for our next episode and have a wonderful day, everyone. Get legal with it.